You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Braca in New York. And her question is about kids that we think might be on the spectrum and how to handle that. So really important question. Thank you so much, Braca, for the email. I'm really looking forward to this. Last reminder, it's so soon. January 3rd at 2 p.m. Eastern, live event. Please register. Click the link in the show notes. Get yourself signed up. It is free. It costs you nothing. We just want to make sure that we have the capacity. And we're going to have a lot of fun, a lot of really engaging dialogue, I'm sure. Looking forward to answering your questions, putting faces to names, actually getting to see some of you. It's going to be really exciting. And we're hoping to do this more moving forward, maybe monthly or bi-monthly or quarterly. I don't really know, I guess, depending on the demand. But anyway, really looking forward to it. So please make sure that you sign up if you haven't already. I know many of you have, so can't wait. Okay, so let's read parts of the email together and then we'll dive in. I'm working with a child who seems to have ASD, and I have a few questions. The clinic that I work at does not allow us to diagnose. That being the case, how do I help the mother understand the child's behavior without actually discussing the diagnosis? She's bringing him in for behavioral issues such as throwing things and banging doors and realizes that he is brilliant. But she has no idea what ASD is and is clueless as to why he's behaving this way. The client presents in session as very autistic. How do I know if the child is appropriate for CCPT if the behavior seems to be at the level of about an 18-month-old but the child is 4? And how do I adapt my language if they're not able to comprehend choices and limits? I wanted to thank you for your podcast. It gives me confidence as a new therapist that I can help and make a difference in my clients' lives. Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you for sharing that, Braca. Okay. So I am a huge proponent of not diagnosing. I'm asked to do it, and the answer is always no at our center. I am ethically and legally able to, but I choose not to, for a variety of reasons, which maybe I'll save that for a different podcast. But I'm actually very supportive of your clinic not diagnosing. And here's why. I don't think that that's our role. I don't think that that's our job. We have a very unique opportunity and position when a family brings us in as a play therapist. We are allied and we have the connection to the child. We support and psychoeducate parents, and we walk on the therapeutic journey with them. But our job is not to get into the business of diagnosing and medicating and labeling. I think that that's very dangerous. I think that it's a slippery slope. And unfortunately, I think that it happens far too often. I think almost every child is overdiagnosed and overmedicated. So I'm a huge proponent of not diagnosing, actually. In this particular case, though, let's be really clear that to advocate for a child, that's what we go back to all the time, right? We advocate. Our job is advocacy. In this particular scenario, it's our job to advocate on behalf of the child. And if you really believe that the child is on the spectrum, that is a warranted conversation with mom. So in scenarios like this at our center, what we've done is couple of approaches. The first is you ask mom in the consultation. So for us, it's every 5 sessions with the child, we meet with the parents. So at your next consult, I would bring up the idea and just pretty neutrally present it. So I wonder if you've ever had him evaluated or tested for anything. See what mom says. If the answer is no, then you might proceed with, I'm wondering if you've considered that there might be something that we could rule out or that we could confirm if you think that that would be helpful. Here's what you're doing when you're asking these types of questions. I guess you're actually making I wonder statements, to be fully clear, but I wonder with parents a lot. I wonder with everyone. The reason why we do this is we're assessing readiness. We're assessing receptivity. We're trying to figure out where the parent is with this. Because if the reaction is, oh, I would never get my kid tested. Okay, that's a very different next comment than, Well, I guess I've just never really thought about it. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. Okay. You need to get a sense of where the parent is, thoughts, feelings, impressions, just what's the vibe. And then what we have found helpful is to give a preface. So, okay, at our center, we do not diagnose. We are not a proponent of labels. But some of the behavior that I'm seeing in the playroom makes me think that it might make sense to have a couple of assessments done just to see if there's any confounding variables in addition to just the emotional and the behavioral factors. Do you see how neutral that is? The goal is it's not shock, it's not fear, it's not overwhelm. It's this is normal, this is appropriate. I'm not pushing for a diagnosis, I'm not pushing for a label, but this is my job. You are the expert. You play with kids all day long. You know what age-appropriate behavior is and what isn't. You know what neurotypical behavior is and what isn't. You know what constant, consistent behavior is and what isn't. And when you see variances, when you see deviations, it warrants bringing it up to parents. That's advocacy. So I'm noticing a few things in the playroom that I think it might warrant just having a couple of evaluations done to see if we're dealing with anything other than emotional and behavioral stuff. If we rule everything else out, then we know what we're dealing with and we know that we're on the appropriate track. If something comes up, we'll navigate that at that time. But I think it would be helpful just to see, you know, what an evaluation reveals. We have a couple of pediatric neuropsychologists that we refer to that we trust, and we typically refer out. Now, some parents are hesitant to get a formal evaluation done, understandably, for a variety of reasons. Here are a couple of approaches for that. First, let them know that it doesn't matter whether a formal evaluation is done. They can choose to completely ignore it and never do anything with it. So let's run a scenario here. Let's say that mom takes child, gets the evaluation, and it comes back, yes, ASD. Mom can burn the report. Mom can throw it away. Mom can throw it in a drawer and never look at it again. She doesn't have to tell the school. She doesn't have to get a 504 or an IEP. It doesn't have to be on any record whatsoever. If you go to a private evaluator, it's just in that person's office and it's in your hand and it never goes further than that. So a parent can choose to do something with it or not do something with it. I think that gives parents peace of mind because I think they see that there's only one path, which is if we get a diagnosis, that means this and this and this and this. No, it doesn't. It can be just for your awareness so that you know what's going on and then you handle it in your own way. That gives parents a lot of peace of mind. Another suggestion that we typically say, if they're very opposed to a formal evaluation, is we will say, I wonder if you'd be open to taking just a free parent report online evaluation. There are plenty of autism spectrum parent report free quizzes online. I mean, are they robust and empirically validated? Probably not super highly, but it at least gives parents a sense of they'll have some semblance of knowledge of what's going on. And I've had several families take it. And when it comes back, yes, it seems that it's leaning toward autism, then they're more willing to go get a formal diagnosis. And let me be really clear, this is not an easy conversation. Okay? No parent wants to hear this. No therapist wants to say this. This is not easy. But here's where your confidence comes in. Here's where your approach comes in. You are the expert. You are someone that this family is trusting and relying on to do what's right by their kid. So you are doing them a disservice and an injustice, I would argue, if you say nothing. So of course you don't want to have this conversation and neither do they, but you do it with love and with kindness and with advocacy. And I want what is best for you and your child and your family. So I have to bring this up to you. And you do it gently and lovingly and with patience and with grace, and they receive it. So often they will be willing to do like a free unofficial diagnosis assessment just to see where they stand. And look, if they take one and it comes back that the self-report says no way for autism, then you might question whether or not there's denial. You might question whether or not, you know, the parent doesn't really have a handle on what's going on with their child. And then that warrants a different discussion. But regardless, you want to approach it in a way that the parent is going to receive it in the best way possible. And you do it with confidence, because if they know, like, and trust you, and if they have a relationship with you, they will deeply appreciate that you brought it up. No parent wants to wonder their whole lives, what is going on with my kid? The why matters. If there's a why, not that the why is anything that anyone would want. I don't think any parent, even when they get the why, I don't think any parent goes, oh, I'm so glad that my child has autism. I'm so glad that my child has a genital disorder. I'm so glad, whatever. But I'm so glad my child has a learning disability, whatever it is. But guess what? It gives them a path moving forward. Because once you know what it is, you then can take steps to do something about it. When you don't know what it is, everyone's just frustrated and confused, child included. So that's why we have these conversations, even though they're not easy. Okay, so how do you know if the child is age appropriate for CCPT if the behavior seems to be at the level of an 18-month-old if the child is four? We know that we can modify CCPT for toddlers. So in the most recent CPRT edition, the second edition, there is modification of CCPT for infants and toddlers. We know that it works. If the child is four, even if he is on the spectrum, we know that the principles will still be appropriate. We know that the skills and the approach will still make sense. So I would not be concerned about the age appropriateness of CCPT for a four-year-old, even if he presents much younger. How do you adapt your language if he's not able to comprehend choices and limits? He is able to comprehend choices and limits. It's just he's probably not used to it, and he's dysregulated, and he's potentially neurodivergent. So it's going to take a lot more rehearsal and a lot more repetition. You're going to have to be more intentional about reminding and bringing it up and refreshing and kind of broken record approach. But at four, even if the child is presenting younger, even an 18-month-old can process choices and limits. Sometimes they might need repetition. Like I said, they might need to kind of have some assistance, but it still is appropriate to use with that age of child. So I don't think you need to be concerned about adapting language either. You just may have to be a little bit more intentional and make sure that you're saying it enough times that it sinks in. All right, Brock in New York, thank you so much for the question, and I hope that that's helpful. We all have kids that we question whether or not they're on the spectrum. I was just in staff last week, and we were discussing a child, and, you know, it's like, I don't think mom and dad have any idea that this is the possibility, but I really do think this child presents that they're on the spectrum. And we were talking about how to address that in the consult. So this is certainly relevant, and it's something that we face. So I'm glad we were able to talk about it. All right. I love y'all. If you want to reach out to me, please do Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. I hope to see you on the live event on Friday. Talk soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.